topic of modern orthodoxy, Rabbi Tversky covered quite a few of the Ikari Hu'emuna. The Rambam, we know, has a list of what he considers are the 13 Ikari Hu'emuna, the principles of faith of our religion. In every generation there's an issue regarding one or another or a few of these Ikari Hu'emuna. In our generation, the main issue between the conservative and the other branches of Judaism is the principle of faith that the Rambam writes, Shazos HaTorah Lo Sehin Mukhlefes, that the laws of the Torah are immutable and the laws of the Torah do not change. This is not accepted by the other groups of Jews. What is this all about? Why should that be the case? Why do we insist so stubbornly? Why do the Orthodox insist so stubbornly that the laws of the Torah cannot be changed? In every state there's a state constitution. The United States has a constitution. So they have amendments to the constitution. If the Ribbono Shel will reveal himself and he'll tell us that the Ribbono Shel gives authority to the rabbis, and the rabbis will say, based on what God authorized them, that we think it's time to change this din. This din is outdated, only made sense in that generation. This generation does make sense. Why such an insistence? So the explanation that's given, both by the Balatanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, in his book on Jewish thought, as well as Rab Chaim Volozhiner, who is a contemporary of his. He was a student of the Vilna Gaon, and he represented the position of the Misnagdim. So they both write the same explanation, that we believe that the laws that appear in the Torah are not merely a collection of laws, not just that these are the mitzvahs say that you have to shake a lulav and you have to sit in sukkah and you have to eat a matzah and you're not allowed to do these averis, you're not allowed to be machal Shabbos, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher food. The laws of the Torah are something much, they are certainly a collection of laws. They are laws, and you have to observe the laws strictly. But in addition to that, there's something much more to the Taryag Mitzvahs, namely that we believe that the combination of all of the laws of the Torah are a representation of God's essence. So how to describe God? How would you say Elokus is? God's essence is something like this. So the Kuzari has a famous expression. He writes, Ilu Yidaitiv Hayisib. If I would understand the nature of God, I would be God himself. The only one who really understands the nature of God is God himself. So the only understanding we can possibly have about the essence of God is only Al Derech HaMashal. And a Mashal we also wouldn't be able to understand at all, because Elokus is so far from anything that we can possibly understand. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes, the Torah is just a Mashal of a Mashal of a Mashal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where does this idea come from, that the Torah, the laws of the Torah are a mashal, or the way Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, a mashal of a mashal of a mashal? So there is a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel where the pasuk reads, Kasha Yoma HaMashal HaKadmoini Verishoyim Yetzei Resha. As the ancient proverb goes, all terrible things emanate from bad people. So who is the author of this Mashal HaKadmoni? Where does it come from? From Confucius. So Rashi, in his commentary on Chumash and Parshas Mishpatim, quotes a Medrash that the Mashal HaKadmoni is a reference to the Torah. In what way is the Torah Mashal HaKadmoni? The Kadmoni is the ancient one with the capital A. That's a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was there before the whole world came into existence. So he's the ancient one. And the Torah is a Mashal HaKadmoni. What does that mean? It's a mashal authored by God. So the Chafetz Chaim says, no. Yes, it was authored by God. That's half of the story. But it's a mashal of God. And he says, a mashal amal davadayma, to understand what this is like. So he says, let's say, I've never met, he lived in a generation, there were still a couple of kings around. So he writes, let's say I've never met the king in a certain country, but I see his photograph in the newspaper. So if I'll come into the capital city and I'll see this man walking in the street and I'll see him protected with guards and police and so on, and I'll recognize the face based on the photograph that appeared in the newspaper, I'll be able to identify that this is the king, because his facial features correspond to those that appeared in the newspaper, in the photograph. So the photograph is a mashal of the king, so to speak. So the collection of all of the laws of the Torah are basically a mashal HaKadmoni, a mashal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a description of Elokus. How can you really describe Elokus? Rav Chaim Volozhiner softens this. So he says it's a mashal of a mashal of a mashal. that we should be able to understand somewhat of a glimpse of what the Likus is all about. Some type of an insight. Somewhat of an insight. And our tradition has it, the Navi Malachi tells us, Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi, that the Ribbono Shel Olam created a world and everything in the creation is always subject to change. Everything is always changing. That's part of the Bria. Except for the Bari Olam himself, the Ribbono Shel Olam is above, he's Lamaila Min Ateva, he's Lamaila Min Azman and Lamaila Min Amokam, because time and place are part of the Bria. So the Ribbono Shel Olam is above all of this. The Ribbono Shel Olam is above change also. So the Navi Malachi makes the statement in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi. God says that his essence never changes. So since we believe that the collection of laws in the Torah, the 613 mitzvahs, the mitzvahs asay with the mitzvahs loy sasei, true, they are a collection of dinim that have to be observed. It's not just a parable. And Avraham Avinu really existed. He really was a person. And Moshe Rabbeinu really existed. And God really exists. And all of these mitzvahs are for real. We have to keep all the mitzvahs. But there's something more to it than that. The collection of all of the mitzvahs gives you a full description to the ability that it's humanly possible to understand, to have a glimpse of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This gives us a glimpse of the essence of God. This is a mashal of a mashal of a mashal, so to speak, of the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So because we believe that God's essence doesn't change, God is lamayla min ateva, only the Bria changes, so that's why we assume shezos ha-Torah lo osim machlefes. That's why we believe that the laws of the Torah are immutable. Nope. So with this, and this is the orthodox stubborn insistence against the other brands of Judaism, that Zos HaTorah Lo Osim Machleves, this is the debate that's going on for the last 100 years with the Reform, with the Conservative, that we believe that the laws of the Torah cannot change. So once you make this assumption, that orthodoxy's position is that the laws of the Torah are immutable, and it has to be like that by definition, because we believe that the mitzvahs are a description of Elikus and God's essence doesn't change. So where is there room for modern orthodoxy? Modern orthodoxy means that things change. We live in changing times, and since the world, that's exactly what the Reform and the Conservative are saying. We live in changing times, so it's time to change a little bit. So if the definition of the orthodox position is that we subscribe to the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam, and one of these principles is this major principle that the laws of the Torah do not change, so isn't this a contradiction in terms? How can you speak of modern orthodoxy as one expression? So the answer is that it's not really a contradiction in terms at all. All we mean is the following. Those who study Shulchan Aruch, those who study Hilchos Shechita, let's say. So when you study Hilchos Shechita, everything is contained in one sif? No. You have one chapter, one simon and another simon and another simon, one chapter after the other after the other after the other, and then you have many sifim within each chapter. If you did it like this, it's okay. If you did it like that, it's not okay. If you stood on your head, then it will be okay. If it's like under these conditions, under those conditions, under the other conditions, and that's one aspect. And then you have the next simon, more shilas with more details. There are a lot of dinim, so there are many, many details in halacha. The same thing hilchos basa b'chalo, but the laws of cooking meat and milk, everything can be summarized in one line. No! People learn in yeshivas, they spend weeks and weeks and sometimes months and months covering all the laws of basa b'chalo. There are a lot of details. There's not one simon, it's not one sif. It's many simonim and many sifim, a lot of details. If it happened like this, if the pot was used for milchiks within the last 24 hours, the answer was one way. If the pot was used for milchiks more than 24 hours ago, the answer will be different. If you have shishim, the din will be like this. If you don't have shishim, the din will be like that. And many, many more details. And many details in Hilchos Basa B'chalo. Is it a suffix? Is it a vada? Is it chicken? Is it meat? Is it really milchik min atar? Is it only milchik min derabbanan? Is it whey? Is it milk? A lot of details. When a shayla comes up, even the experts can't pass in 1, 2, 3. They have to look through all the details. And there's a long checklist. The Pim Gordon has a long checklist. 100,000 questions that you have to ask to find out what the din is. And the same in Hilchos Shabbos, all areas of halacha, very detailed. We have many details in the halacha. And it's correct that the world is changing. And because of the fact that the world is changing, that's why we have to open up our eyes and to take a good look to see maybe the fact that we have always been applying Sif Aleph, maybe that no longer applies. Maybe we have to apply Sif Beis. Not that we're changing the din. If you live under different circumstances, you have a different shaila. You have a different shaila, you're going to get a different tshuva. It's going to be a different psak. It's Not that anyone's thinking of changing the halacha. No, Orthodoxy insists shezos hatar lo simoch lefes, the laws of the Torah do not change, but the world is changing. So sometimes we have to apply sif aleph, and sometimes we have to apply sif beis. And although it may look as if we're changing the religion, it may look as if we're changing the psak, we're not really changing the psak. All of this says on the books. It says in Shulchan Aruch, if the conditions are such, then the answer is going to be different. Then the psak is going to be a different psak. Very often, people think that they're doing exactly the same as their fathers and their grandfathers and their great-grandfathers, and because of the fact that we live in different times, they're not doing the same. They're changing. They're not observing the religion in the same way. If their great-grandfathers would have lived in our generation, they wouldn't observe, they wouldn't have done the mitzvahs the way their great-grandchildren are doing it, because the circumstances are so different. Everything is a different ball game, and a different sif applies in the Shulchan Aruch. Just to take some famous biblical examples, we read in Bereishis that Avraham Avinu was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go to Eretz Yisrael, and then there was a famine. So it says, Vayered Avraham Mitzrayim, that Avraham Avinu went down to Egypt because of the famine. So it's interesting, Avraham Avinu is a colorful figure who's described in the Chumash with the 10 nisyonos that he had. And Yaakov Avinu is described in the Chumash with all of his children and all the asakim that he had. And Yitzchak, hardly anything is described about Yitzchak. The only thing that the Chumash describes about Yitzchak is that he followed in the footsteps of his father. He carried on the tradition. That's very difficult. He carried over the tradition of his father without changing anything. He dug the same wells that his father dug, and he gave the wells the same name that his father gave. So the Zohar comments on that pasuk. The commentaries on Chumash quote this from the Zohar. They say that Yitzchok's ikar essence, his midah, was that he carried on all the traditions of his father Yitzchok. So we read in the Chumash that during the lifetime of Yitzchok there was a famine. So Yitzchok was going to do exactly what his father did. What did his father do when there was a famine? He went down to Egypt. So Yitzchok is prepared to go down to Egypt. On his way to Egypt, he stops off in Beersheba, and he has a gilui shechina. God appears to him, and he says, you're not allowed to go down to Egypt. How are you talking? What do you mean, not allowed to go down? But I follow the tradition of my father. So the Baruch Shalom says, that's not the tradition of your father. You were offered on the Akedah as the korban. And there's a din, if you take the korban outside of its place, each korban has a different makom. If it's a kochim kalim, a korban shlamim, or a korban toid, a korban pesel, so the makom is the whole Yerushalayim. If it's a kochim, if it's a korban on the higher level of Kedusha, so the makom is more restricted, the makom is only the azara, inside the Beis HaMikdash itself. So if a korban is taken outside of its correct makom, it becomes nifsal b'yotze, it becomes pasel. So the Baruch Shalom explains to Yitzchak Avinu, you are not following in the footsteps of your father. Your father was not a korban, so he could travel any way he wants in the world. But you were offered on the Akedah as a korban. True, he wasn't slaughtered. The animal sacrifice was substituted instead the last minute, but Yitzchak had the status of a korban. So he says, if you will leave, and your makom is Eretz Yisrael, it's not the Beis HaMikdash, the Azara, there was no Beis HaMikdash then, and it's not the Yerushalayim, but it's the whole Eretz Yisrael. So because you have the status of a korban, if you will leave Eretz Yisrael, you will become pasul, like a korban goes out of its makom. And your father himself, if he would have been a korban, would also not have left Eretz Yisrael. So you're not following in the footsteps of your father. You're changing the masor. Yitzchak didn't realize that doing exactly what his father did would be a change in the masor. He wouldn't be carrying over the tradition from his father. It would be a violation of the masorah. And we read later, the Gemara has such a discussion in Sanhedrin with respect to Yeshua ben Nun, that when they waged the war against the city Yericho, so Yeshua ben Nun declared a cherem, everything was hegdish, none of the Bnei Yisrael are permitted to take any of the loot from the city Yericho. So the Tanakh describes in the book of Yeshua that there was one character, Ochon ben Karmi ben Zabdi ben Zerach, and he took money and clothing and all kinds, gold and silver, all kinds of stuff. And the rabbis had a tradition based on the wording that appears in the book of Yeshua that this wasn't the first time that this Cheverman had violated a Cherem. Already in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the different battles that were taking place during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rebbe of Yeshua ben Nun, Moshe Rabbeinu, made such Charamim against the enemy that all of the property should be hegdish, no one should take anything, and this character often violated every Cherem at that time also. So when Ochan violated the cherem that was placed on the city Yericho by Yeshua ben Nun, so the next war that they waged, so the city was conquered. Yericho was conquered. So the next war that they were supposed to wage was against the city Ai. Ai and Yud, the city Ai. So they lost the battle against Ai. So Yeshua ben Nun couldn't believe it. How can it be? God promised that there's going to be miraculous victories, that none of the Jews would lose their lives. And here they lost the lives of 36 people. One person who was the equivalent of 36 people. Whatever the meaning of the pasuk is, they lost the war. How could they lose the war? So the Rabbanu Shel Olam tells Yeshua ben Nun, idiot! It's your fault who told you to make a cherem. What do you mean, idiot? It's your fault. So the Gemara says on the same page, he was following the footsteps of his Rebbe. Moshe Rabbeinu gemacht a cherem. He did exactly the same thing. And this cherem on Ochan, who violated the cherem in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, after they conquered Yericho, he had violated all the haram in the earlier generation by Moshe Rabbeinu. So what's wrong with what Yeshua ben Nun did? So the Maharsha explains on the Gemara. No, it's a big difference. In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was not yet the principle of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. Read this week in Parshas Nitzavim. Hanistaris L'Hashem Elokeinim Haniglos Lono V'Aneinu Adoylam. So Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes from this passage in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that this principle of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh, that if one Jew violates an Avera, all of the whole community who have an inkling of the fact that he's doing an Avera, if they're not aware, they're not aware. But if they know about the fact that he's doing an Avera, so all deserve a punishment. So this principle of Orvus, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh, didn't begin to apply until the days of Yeshua ben Nun. Kol Zman that Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, there was no principle of Orvus. So if one person violated an Avera, he would be punished for that. And the other members of the Jewish community would not deserve any punishment. But after Yeshua ben Nun crossed over the Yarden, and the very first day they went to Hagrizim and Harevo, and they accepted the brachas of Klolas, and they accepted this principle of Orvus. So now we live in a different world. Now it doesn't make sense any longer to make any cherem. All you need is one person, the same fellow who violated that cherem every single time there was a cherem. The five charamim that Moshe Rabbeinu instituted, all five were violated by this fellow, Ochan. But that was, he was going to burn a Gehenna. It didn't affect the rest of the Klal Yisrael. So the Rebbeinu Shalom is angry at Yeshua ben Nun. What do you mean? You think that you're the Talmud Muvak of Moshe Rabbeinu, and you're following in the footsteps of Moshe Rabbeinu? That's not called following in the footsteps of your Rebbe. We live in a different generation. There's a principle of Orvus now, and it doesn't make sense to make any more haramim. If one person is going to violate the cherem, everyone will be held responsible. You should have realized that your Rebbe himself, Moshe Rabbeinu, if he'd be alive today, would not have made a cherem. Yeshua ben Nun thought that he was doing exactly the same as his Rebbe. And Yitzchak Avinu thought that this is part of the Masor. You have to do like the father, like Avram Avinu did. You have to go down to Egypt when there's a famine. And they didn't realize that sometimes doing exactly what the father did and what the grandfather did is not really doing exactly the same. All you need is one slight difference or one major difference, and you're doing something completely different. Just because my grandfather... This is not the case. Just because my grandfather was one of the founders of the Mizrahi doesn't mean that I should belong to the Mizrahi. Just because my grandfather was one of the founders of the Aguda, which is also not the case, doesn't mean that I should belong to the Aguda now. The Aguda before HaKamas HaMedina is a different Aguda. The Mizrahi after Mohammed Sheshet HaYamim is a different Mizrahi. The whole world is a different world. Just because the word, this is called Aguda, this is called Mizrahi, it doesn't mean it to say. There's not necessarily any similarity living or dead. So each generation you have to judge anew. Is this what my grandfather would, if I want to follow in the footsteps of my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, is that what my grandfather would have said? Is that what my great-grandfather would have done? Well, not necessarily so. If you live in a whole different world, everything is different. Maybe you apply a different sieve. Maybe my grandfather himself wouldn't have joined the Aguda, wouldn't have joined the Mizrahi now, because everything is a whole different circumstance. Everything is changing in the world. Just because there was an issue now in the newspapers that shook everybody up, just because, let's say, in Europe, my grandparents lived in Europe in a little village and all of the Jewish girls dressed one way. All the girls dressed like this. So just because all the Jewish girls dressed one way means necessarily that if I live in America, where there's a whole big city, New York City is a gigantic city, I have the right to insist that my daughters should dress the same way that they dressed in Europe. It may not necessarily fit in with the rest of the society. Maybe in Europe it made sense. Maybe in America it doesn't necessarily make sense. Just because you're doing exactly the same as what your grandparents did, but the circumstances were different. We're not changing the religion. Sometimes you have to apply a different sieve. Sometimes if the grandparents would live in America, they wouldn't insist that their children should dress like that. If you live under different circumstances, so the answer may be totally different. I remember when my family lived in Philadelphia, there was no yeshiva, so my parents sent me to New York to learn in yeshiva ktana before my bar mitzvah. And for a few years I stayed by my grandparents in the Bronx, and I went to Salanta yeshiva this. I remember my grandparents were very poor. They simply couldn't afford to leave on lights the whole Shabbos. So there was a light on in the bathroom, an electric light. And in the kitchen there was no electric light. My grandmother lit the candles, and when the candles went out, it was dark. That was it. Years ago, that's how you would identify an Orthodox Jew. If it was dark in his home, you knew that he was Orthodox, because the Orthodox Jews were poor, they couldn't afford, there was no Shabbos clock, and they couldn't afford to leave the lights on the whole Shabbos. So if it's dark, you walk in the street, you see a dark home, you know that that's a religious Jew. The lights are on, obviously, he's not too Orthodox, because he can't afford to leave the lights on, the whole Shabbos is going to turn him out. Soloveitchik used to point that years ago, in the days of the Rambam, that was the sign of a Karoi home. That the Karoim didn't allow any lights to be on in the home. The Karoim interpreted that you're not allowed to leave on lights. So when you would walk in the street on Leil Shabbos, you would see lights, you would see a home that was lit up. Oh, you would know that they're Orthodox, they're traditional. And if it would be dark, that would be the sign that they're anti-traditional, that they were from the Karoim. And when I was growing up in the Bronx, in my time, the Orthodox Jews were so poor. So it's paradoxical. The siman of an Orthodox family was that there are no lights on. So it was mamish dark. So I understand when my grandmother benchlich, there was no problem. She would light the candles and she would say the bracha lahadik neshal Shabbos. Now, who just lights the candles and you don't have any lights on? And the candles go out after a couple of hours and it's dark in the house. Nobody does that. Everybody has the lights on. So people don't realize that today, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that what if the candles are lit already, the candles are on the whole afternoon, someone has the lights on the whole afternoon on Friday afternoon. So when it comes Friday evening, time to bench lift, so it says in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote a tesis like that in Bamem Adlikin, you have to turn out the lights, blow out the candles, then light them again l'shem Shabbos. So many people don't realize, they have the big chandelier is on in the dining room, the lights are burning the whole day, late in the afternoon, whatever. And then it comes to Shabbos, lichtbenchen, so the woman just lights the candles, she says, Baruch lahadik neshal Shabbos. What's she lighting candles? The room is flooded with light. What is she saying, lahadlik ner? Lahadlik ner means you're illuminating the room. It's fully illuminated. So the many of the contemporary poskim say, Rav Soloveitchik used to say this, Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, they all said the same thing. Before the balabas, the bench is lit, she has to turn off all the lights in the room and then turn them on again for the sake of Shabbos. And then when she's turning on the chandelier and all the other lights, whatever she wants, as many lights as they can afford, to have a beautifully illuminated dining room and a living room, whatever, then she should light the candles as well. And then you say the bracha goes on all of the lights that you just put on. Aye, but that's not what my grandmother did. What do you mean your grandmother? Your grandmother never could afford to leave on a chandelier. You don't even realize. You're not doing the same as your grandmother if you leave on the chandelier the whole day Friday and you light the candle and say, Abrocha, that's not following the footsteps. You're not thinking. That's totally different. Because of the changed circumstances that we have on the chandelier, the lights are on, you have to wake up and realize that you're not doing the same as your grandmother. You're doing different. The grandmother would never light candles when there already was a light in the room. She didn't have to extinguish any light. She would turn off the electric light because they couldn't afford to leave it on the whole Shabbos. There are many halachas like that. Ablezer Shach just passed away last year in Eretz Yisrael, so he's known for his chidush Torah, for his tilpulim. But he has in his svarim on the Rambam, he has many chidushim halacha lemaisa. He has, for example, the generally accepted opinion is in Shulchan Aruch, the accepted opinion in Shulchan Aruch is that when one rents an apartment, the obligation to put on a mezuzah is only midirabbanan. The biblical obligation of putting a mezuzah is only chsavta ma mezuzah beisecho ubisharecho, if the house belongs to me. If it's only rented, there's no biblical obligation, it's only rabbinical in nature, and the obligation only sets in after 30 days, after you live in the house for 30 days. So some say if you sign the contract, you've got to leave there for more than 30 days, you have to put a mezuzah from day number one, and others are not so convinced about that. Even if you sign the contract to live there for more than 30 days, some say you still have the 30-day grace period. But what happens if the house belongs to me? Then it's a biblical obligation, you have to put the mezuzah on day number one. So Rav Shach points out that based on another sif in Shulchan Aruch in a totally different place, in Hilchas Avodah Zarah, it says that today, that din, it says the first, that din no longer applies, that we consider Schiris Kanya. Today we follow din of the Malchusa, and today, in the days of the Talmud, if the landlord rents me an apartment and his home burns down, my landlord lives in New Jersey, in Passaic. So let's say, Chalila v'chalila, have a nice landlord. Let's say his home should burn down. So in the days of the Talmud, it says he has a right to evict me from my apartment that he rented to me, because it's self-understood that he only rents the apartment because he doesn't need it. If his house burns down, of course he can kick me out. Today, that's going to fly. So the Rishonim say it doesn't apply this man is there. Why not? Because we don't follow the din of the Talmud. We follow the secular law. And the secular law, there is no such thing. So Taisa says, therefore, since today when we rent an apartment, the landlord really doesn't have any shlita any longer. He doesn't have any rights over the apartment. He can't destroy his apartment. But basically, when he rents you the apartment, it belongs to you for that amount of time, provided you don't destroy it. So Taisa says, Allah HaMaisa, Bizman HaZeh, we should say the Schiris Kanya. So Rav Shach says, wait a minute. The Schiris Kanya, so the obligation to put a mezuzah on a rented apartment becomes biblical. You no longer have the 30 days. He didn't change the halacha. The halacha is in Shulchan Aruch. He never changed it. The din is that I rented apartments only with the Rabbanan. You have 30 days. But the way we rent apartments belongs to a different sif in Shulchan Aruch. That's the same as buying an apartment. It has the same status as Shalachem. And he tightens the obligation to put a mezuzah with Bimin HaTorah. The Choheno, there are many, many dinim and many minhagim where we have to investigate again to make sure, are we really following the tradition of our parents, of our grandparents, of our forefathers? I live in Washington Heights, so we had a different Rabbi Schwab, was the rabbi in the Breuer's community. So he used to stay over. Every year he would learn. Every morning after Shachas, he would learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for 2 or 3 minutes, and somebody would say Kaddish Derabbanan. If somebody Avelim, and only one person says Kaddish, so they had to have another opportunity for someone to say another Kaddish. So every year he would finish the whole cycle of all the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He would go back again next year. So he would always point out time after time again. In the days of the Talmud, it was required that a person who wants to daven has to be fully dressed, formally dressed. So those who lived in Persia, to be formally fully dressed, if you go to a wedding and you come to daven, you got to have a big sash in the middle, a gartel. Today, when you go out in the street, that's the way people dress today, with a gartel. No, they wear a tie and a jacket. So today, the gartel means you have to wear a tie. So he would tell over the story, the humorous story, that there was a chassid who went to work one day, he went to the office, and then he was going to daven mincha, and he realized he forgot his gartel, so he took off his tie. And he tied it around himself and used it as a gartel. He said, what was the guy doing? You don't need a gartel today. It's not a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. It's not engraved in stone that you need a gartel. The Gemara says you have to be fully, formally dressed like you would go to a wedding. So in the days of the Persians, the rabbis lived in Babylonia. In the days of the Persians, that was formally dressed. They would wear a gartel. They would wear a sash. But today, formally dressed is the tie. He's not changing the din. He's just pointing out. You have to know how to translate the din. How does the din apply? Bizman hazeh? And many halachas like that. I remember on another occasion he pointed out there are many minhagim that were instituted in Europe based on circumstances which no longer apply. We have a principle on dinim derabbanan, dovish dominion, soch min yanach latir. If the rabbis introduced a rabbinical decree, a prohibition midirabbanan, because of a certain reason, and the Talmud always explains what the reasons are. So even if you live in a generation where the reason absolutely has no application whatsoever, the din the Rabbanan still has to be observed, unless you'll get the rabbis to reconvene, which once in a while will happen. But the rabbis will reconvene and they'll declare that we are repealing this din the Rabbanan. That's called davish of minyan, a gzera the Rabbanan that was instituted for a specific reason, still has to be observed even if you live in a generation where the reason doesn't apply. So Rab Chaim Moser and many other poskim, there are more, many others say that this does not apply to minhagim. This principle only applies to a real din derabbanan, doesn't apply to a minhag. So you have to reinvestigate all the minhagim. Do the reasons for the minhagim still apply today or not? So he would point out also every year in the cycle of going through the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So before Pesach, he would go through some of the Hilchas Pesach. He wouldn't cover everything. The Balabatim don't have to write it. The Rabbanim have to keep something for themselves that the Balabatim have to ask Shilas. So he would cover the din that Balabatim have to know. So every year he would mention that in certain parts of Hungary and certain parts of Germany and Europe, they had an old minig that they would not eat chicken on Pesach. They would only eat flesh. What's that? Because the chicken feed used to be grain. And it was a very common shaila. Taisus lived centuries ago, and in Shulchan Aruch, and this was always going on. When they would check the chicken, they wouldn't throw out the whole belly. They would cook the whole chicken with everything together, and very often they would find a kernel of grain that was cooked with the chicken in the burning hot soup in the water. And the chashash was that the kernel of grain may have just turned into chametz. And if you cook it on Pesach, chametz on Pesach is b'mashu. So you have to throw out the whole chicken. And behemoth, you don't cook a whole behemoth together with the belly. If someone's going to cook the belly, there's going to be something else. And the belly, they're going to empty out. But the chickens, they used to cook all together with the belly, with full and everything. So that's why a minig developed in many areas of Germany, and many areas of Hungary, not to eat chicken on Pesach. So Rabbi Schwab Zecharloch pointed out that this minig clearly no longer applies today. Nobody in America or in Eretz Yisrael, nobody in the world feeds grain anymore to the chickens. It's way too expensive. They feed maize. They feed corn on the cob to the chicken. Corn on the cob we don't eat on Pesach, but that's not chometz, that's kitnius. So if you cook a chicken on Pesach and you find some corn on the cob, you don't throw out the whole chicken, you take out the corn and you throw it out. Enjoy. You can eat the rest of it. So he says the whole minig doesn't apply anymore today. Minhagim, we have to investigate which minhagim do apply, which minhagim don't apply. For this you have to have an unusual Talmid HaChamim who understand what the true meaning of the halacha is in order to interpret. The halacha used to be observed years ago by wearing a sash, by wearing a gartel, and today that din is supposed to be fulfilled by wearing a tie when you come to shul. Wear a jacket and a tie. You have to be fully, formally dressed in a proper fashion. And you have to understand well what the basis of the minhagim is, and to ascertain whether the reasons for the minhagim still apply or not. So basically, for many years, there was a misunderstanding of what modern orthodoxy was all about. Many people thought that is basically a compromise. From the 613 mitzvahs, we'll take a centrist position. Why be an extreme Orthodox Jew to observe all the 613 mitzvahs, and why be extreme to this? No good, unhealthy to be an extremist. Maimonides himself is the major proponent among the Jews that we shouldn't be extremists, we should always go in the middle of the road. So the middle of the road is 307 mitzvahs, 613 mitzvahs. So you divide it in half, you go in the middle. So that's not centrist orthodoxy. That's not modern orthodoxy. That's not orthodoxy. It means that you're not observing. You've decided to observe some of the mitzvahs, not to observe other mitzvahs. That's a distortion of what orthodoxy is. Modern orthodoxy means that we have to keep our eyes open. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein does this in every tshuva. He takes a din in Shulchan Aruch that has been observed for many years, and he says, and no longer applies today due to changed circumstances. We live in a different world. So Sif Aleph no longer applies. We live under the conditions of Sif Beis. And Simon Yud Gimel doesn't apply. We have to be governed by Simon Yud Dalet. Everything is different. Rabbi Soloveitchik was very known for this. He would point out that what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that was under those circumstances. We live in a different world, so we have to apply the next Sif in the Shulchan Aruch. Just open up your eyes and you realize it. So that's very important. Many people who feel that they're following all the traditions are really distorting the traditions. This is not the way their grandparents and their great-grandparents observed the religion. The whole society was different. Everything was so different. If you're going to do exactly the same, you think that you're doing exactly the same as your parents and your grandparents who lived in Europe so many years ago, a lot of times there'll be a major distortion involved because of the fact that the conditions are so different. For many years, the modern Orthodox group was simply compromising. And a lot of them lost their children either to one direction or the other. Their children realized that there was a contradiction here. I remember when I was a young student in high school in the yeshiva, so we were studying Baba Basra. So I had a European, at that time almost all the rabbis were European. Very few were American born. So I remember we were studying a Gemara in the second Perek in Baba Basra. About a fellow has a wine press and he has barrels of wine. And somebody stole the barrels of wine, and he finds them halfway down the block. And he doesn't know who gambled the wine. Was it stolen by Yidden? So even if they gambled the wine, it didn't become treif. Or was it stolen by Nachrim, who may have handled the wine, and they made the wine treif? The barrels are, let's say, Arov. So the Gemara says there was a certain city, Barov Ganva Yisrael. The overwhelming majority of the Ganovim were known to be Jews. So the Gemara says, okay, so the wine is kosher. So I remember one of the students asked the Rebbe Bitzmimus, Rebbe, but if the fellow is a Ganav, so what do you mean the wine is kosher? He's not a Ganav. He's not religious. Doesn't he ask for the wine? So I remember the Rebbe explained to us that we're Americans. Americans think more logically. They're more consistent than Europeans. So Europeans, they didn't see any inconsistency. A person, he keeps these mitzvahs and the other mitzvah he doesn't keep. Either you believe in God, you don't believe in God. Either you have an awareness that God is here. So how do you do that, Aver? No, they didn't think so much about it. He says Americans are more logical and more consistent, and this Talmud can't see. Rebbe, if he said Ganef, means it's not religious, so the wine should be trained. So he should ask for the wine. So the children of the original modern Orthodox in America, many of them saw this inconsistency by their parents. So either they went all the way to the right, or they went all the way to the left. They saw that they're not going to maintain what their parents are doing because it just didn't make any sense. In recent years, the modern Orthodox have gained a little more respectability because in my generation, there was a Medina Yisrael, but we weren't learning in Eretz Yisrael. After, the generation after mine, so the students go to Eretz Yisrael and they learn much more, and they get used to observing mitzvahs in a stronger fashion. So when they come back, so they see, when they see inconsistencies in the parents, so they say, that's not modern Orthodoxy, that's conservative. You're just making a compromise. So they're prepared to observe all the mitzvahs at Torah, and they're prepared to update the mitzvahs. Fine, that's modern Orthodoxy. Avada, you have to update. You have to search the literature, study all the mitzvahs, study all the minhagim, and find out, should we continue to observe all of the mitzvahs in the same way our parents did? Is that the correct application? Or is it time that we should have to apply a different sif in Shulchan Aruch? That's not a compromise. But you're updating the halacha. You're doing it the more correct way. It's the more correct way to fulfill the mitzvahs. But again, this requires a lot of study, a lot of understanding. You have to have Talmid HaChacham. Stam, you have a person who has a little knowledge, a smattering of a knowledge of Talmud, a smattering of a knowledge of Shulchan, so he's going to say, this applies in this way and that way, and shine, and do away with all the mitzvahs out there. You have to have a learned individual who knows what the reason for the minhagim, what are the reasons of the minhagim, what is the nature of the dinim in order to know how it applies. It's something that we have to think seriously about, because when you go in the middle, so they throw stones from the right and from the left, so you're losing out on both accounts. We don't want to lose our children. We have to make sure that we are leading a life that is consistent. The children have a prayer. If the children want to become chassidish, okay, I'm not a chassidish. My children want to become chassidish, that's another derech and avodas Hashem. Okay, I would not be that thrilled about it, but I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't be angry. I wouldn't be angry about it. Okay, that's a proven derech that we saw for generations that worked. Or if the parents are chassidish and their child decides he wants to become a yeshivish and misnagid, which many of the chassidish, they send their children to these Litvish yeshivas, and they become Lithuanianized, and the children leave away all the chassidus, and they become real like Litvakas. Okay, so the parents are not so thrilled about it. They would have preferred that the children should maintain their minhagim, but they know that this is a valid derech and avodas Hashem. They know there are many Orthodox Jews who are not Hasidish. Everybody is tolerant of the other one. Okay, but we don't want, that's not called losing your child. So another derech and avodas Hashem. Fine. We wouldn't be so upset about that. But many chalila are losing their children because the children see that the parents are simply inconsistent. They're just contradicting themselves. So we have to be careful regarding this issue of the modern Orthodox not to make this mistake, to think that modern Orthodoxy that we all subscribe to means that you just make some kind of a hodgepodge of a compromise and you keep 300 some odd mitzvahs of the 613 that's not going to fly, and it will be detected right away. The children will realize that there's a fraud and there's a distortion over here. You have to be careful to try to observe the mitzvahs properly with a shita. We have to observe the mitzvahs in accordance with a consistent shita. Thank you very much. See you, Achsima Teva.